The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Welcome to a Wednesday. Nicole Sandler here on this, the day after Election Day. And what a difference a year, especially a year with Donald Trump in the White House, makes, huh? Boy, just think back a year ago. If everybody who voted yesterday had gotten out and voted, and those were sort of in line with the rest of the nation, if the turnout from all the other states reached what Virginia did yesterday, we might be sitting in a much different place today. But I guess the woulda, coulda, shouldas are quite strong right now. Here's what Chuck Schumer said about what happened in Virginia yesterday.
I think it's pretty obvious that so many people in Virginia were upset with the way President Trump has tried to govern, has been unable to get anything done, has resorted to tweeting instead of leading. This was a rejection not only of President Trump, but of the policies that he and the Republican Party seem to be adopting.
You know, I think that's a big part of it. I do. I think Trump has inspired people to vote, Democrats, people who want anybody but Trump in there, and who are just so sickened by his policies, it inspired them to vote. But it also inspired a lot of people to run. And I think that's the big difference. In Virginia's House of Delegates, they had more people running for seats that had been uncontested for, in some case, decades. And because people, mostly a lot of women, threw their hats in the ring and ran, there were choices for people to make, choices for people to go out and vote for. And I'll tell you, women and people of color had big, big days yesterday. Danica, I think that's how you say her name, Danica Rome, first openly transgender state lawmaker, was voted into Virginia's House of Delegates. And the sweet revenge here, and yeah, I think it is, she unseated Virginia Delegate Bob Marshall, the Republican who introduced the bathroom bill that would have prohibited transgender students from using the bathroom of their choice. You know, sweet revenge. Then there's Andrea Jenkins. She's now the first openly trans woman of color elected to the city council of a major U.S. city, that in Minneapolis. She won there. I'm just going to share with you some of the women who won yesterday, because they made up the biggest block of the winners. Sheila Oliver is the first female African-American lieutenant governor. She won for the state of New Jersey, the new lieutenant governor of the state of New Jersey. And I guess I should mention that the lieutenant governor of Virginia is an African-American man, although let me give you his name, Justin Fairfax. But I'm concentrating on the women now, because women came out in such high numbers to run, and they won. Vi Lyles will be the first African-American female mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina. That's pretty amazing. Yvonne Spicer, first mayor of the new city of Framingham, Massachusetts. What?
Can I break in for 1 second?
Yeah.
There's a story on the Hill. You're talking about women and sweet revenge. There's a story on the Hill about a woman who won a local office in New Jersey who was inspired to run by the gentleman who previously held that office.
Are you sure he was a gentleman? I hate when people just use that word.
A person who held that office, who surprisingly was a Republican, who on the day of the Women's March posted a meme saying, "Will the Women's March be over in time for them to cook dinner?"
Ooh.
That was what inspired her to run, and she unseated that bastard.
Good for her. Yeah, see, and there are tons of stories like that. So many women were inspired to run by Trump. Not necessarily, you know, and so I think that that adds more juice to Chuck Schumer's argument that, you know, it was a rejection of Trump's policies, not only in getting people to vote, but getting people to run. The city of Framingham, Massachusetts, and yes, that's how you pronounce it, just became a city. It relinquished its status as the largest town in America. And for their first mayor, it is a woman of color, Yvonne Spicer. Joyce Craig, let's see, is the first ever female mayor of Manchester, New Hampshire. There you go. Her name is, I said, Joyce Craig. I'm just going down a list, a Huffington Post article of a bunch of winners. But what jumped out to me are all the women. Elizabeth Guzman and Hala Ayala both defeated Republican incumbents to become the first ever Latinas elected to the Virginia House of Delegates. Right? This is pretty good stuff. Jenny Durkan is Seattle's new mayor. She's Seattle's first lesbian mayor. She'll also be the first female mayor of Seattle since 1928. Yeah, 1928. So good for you, Seattle. Who else do we have here? Kathy Tran. She came to the U.S. as a refugee from Vietnam when she was an infant. She has become the first Asian American woman elected to the Virginia House of Delegates. So it's not only a lot of women, but a lot of a very diverse group of women. Janet Diaz will become the first Latina member of the city council in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Let's see. Mary Parham Copeland will be the first African-American mayor of Milledgeville, Texas. And if you ever think your vote doesn't count, she beat the incumbent, Gary Thrower, by just six votes. Six votes. So, yes, your votes do count. Kathy Murillo is the first Latina mayor of Santa Barbara, California. She's been a city councilwoman since 2011. Laura Curran will be the first the first female county executive for New York's Nassau County. So this is reaching far-reaching ramifications, not just Virginia by any stretch of the imagination. Lisa Middleton is the first openly transgender person to be elected to a non-judicial office in California. She's joining Palm Springs City Council. Mazahir Salih will be the first Sudanese American to join the Iowa City Council following her win yesterday. And I'm sure there are many others. This is just from one Huffington Post article, and it's pretty, pretty stunning. Okay, let's go to the phones. Hi, who's this?
This is your favorite progressive liberal, Lindbergh.
it's my Hello? Favorite liberal progressive what?
Friend Linwood.
Linwood. Hey, Linwood, what's happening?
Yes. I'm feeling pretty good today. Just the fact that we won the governor's races here and we made some strong history. There was an article that I read in the Hill magazine saying that Jerry Falwell Jr., no stranger in my state, said that Northern Virginia should be annexed from the state of Virginia. And it should return the state to the Virginians. I'm like, because you're lost and you're in that cesspool called Campbell County, Lynchburg area, which got outvoted by Northern Virginia. Are you kidding me?
All right. Well, that's what you get for reading Jerry Falwell Jr. for caring what he says.
Yeah, he actually tweeted it.
Yeah. All right.
And I'm like, wow, you know, they don't put up good candidates. They put up these candidates that run these very racist, very angry, bitter campaigns. And yeah, they tack into that because there is some anger in my state because Southwest Virginia is totally ignored. And nobody pays attention to Southern Virginia. Everybody pays attention to Northern Virginia. So I see the sentiment there, but does it play on there just to get votes? It's despicable.
I hear you. Thanks for the call, Linwood. It's always good to hear from you. We've got Richard Esko coming up today on the show. He's been writing about, or he wrote a piece at ourfuture.org about the discord in the Democratic Party. Now, we're feeling a lot better today than we were yesterday at this time, but it's still a discussion worth having. So we'll do that. But first, a look at the day's news.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The Democrats had a great night Tuesday, securing electoral victories across the country. In Virginia, Democrat Ralph Northam won a bitter race for governor against Republican Ed Gillespie, who ran a barrage of attack ads hitting Northam on divisive issues like immigration, gang crime, and Confederate statues. From Asia, Trump trashed Gillespie.
Well, the president is in South Korea, but he just tweeted about the race in the Commonwealth of Virginia. He said, quote, Ed Gillespie worked hard, but did not embrace me or what I stand for. Don't forget, Republicans won 4 out of 4 House seats. With the economy doing record numbers, we will continue to win even bigger than before, exclamation mark.
In New Jersey, Democrat Phil Murphy, a former investment banker and ambassador to Germany, defeated Kim Guadagno to succeed Chris Christie as governor. The transgender community won big.
Danica Rome is the first transgender woman elected in Virginia and the first elected to a state legislature anywhere in the country. Her election to the Virginia House of Delegates, she beat Republican incumbent Bob Marshall, who has been in office for 25 years and proudly has been calling himself Virginia's chief homophobe. He was the author of failed legislation in Virginia to ban transgender people from using public bathrooms of their choice.
I campaign on the platform of building up our infrastructure instead of tearing down each other. And that means fixing Route 28 locally here. And that also means working to make Virginia a more inclusive commonwealth. So no matter what you look like, where you come from, how you worship, who you love, how you identify, or any other inherent identifier that you have, you should be celebrated because of who you are, not despite it. And in the words of St. Francis of Sales, be who you are and be that well. And that message resonated. A message of inclusion and equality resonated here. And for a national audience, I think it's really important that we note that discrimination is a disqualifier and that you can champion inclusion, you can champion equality and equity, and you can win.
In Minneapolis, Andrea Jenkins became the first openly transgender candidate to win a city council seat in a major city. And in Pennsylvania, Tyler Titus became the first openly transgender person elected in state history by winning a seat on the Erie School Board. In Maine, voters approved a measure allowing them to join 31 other states in expanding Medicaid under Obamacare. The referendum represented the first time since the Affordable Care Act took effect that the question of expansion was put before voters. Governor Paul LePage had vetoed 5 attempts to expand the program previously. The president delivered a speech to the South Korean National Assembly Tuesday, a few hours after a surprise visit to the Korean demilitarized zone was thwarted by bad weather. Trump called on all nations to join forces, quote, to isolate the brutal regime of North Korea.
This is the first time a U.S. president had made this kind of address. It was a different tack, really, for the U.S. President Donald Trump. We didn't hear the direct threats to destroy North Korea. We didn't hear the direct insults against the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, like Rocket Man. That would have made lawmakers very happy. But what we did hear instead was a very stark and blunt insult and criticism of the North Korean regime. Mr. Trump really did home in on the fact that that Kim Jong-un spends a lot more money on the nuclear and missile program than he does trying to feed his own people. It was a speech where he talked about the human rights abuses within the country. But it did take some by surprise that it was such a strong onslaught on the North Korean regime, calling it a cult. So certainly the North Koreans are not going to take very well to this, although they have told CNN that they would be watching very closely, but they wouldn't necessarily be listening too closely, because the fact is there is nothing that he can say, according to North Korea, that would change their minds about what's happening.
Today, I hope I speak not only for our countries, but for all civilized nations. When I say to the North, do not underestimate us and do not try us. Anyone who doubts the strength or determination of the United States should look to our past, and you will doubt it no longer. We will not permit America or our allies to be blackmailed or attacked. We will not allow American cities to be threatened with destruction. We will not be intimidated, and we will not let the worst atrocities in history be repeated here on this ground we fought and died so hard to secure.
Of course, Trump couldn't resist an opportunity to plug one of his golf courses, seriously.
And Korean golfers are some of the best on earth. In fact, and you know what I'm going to say, the Women's U.S. Open was held this year at Trump National Golf Club in Bedminster, New Jersey. And it just happened to be won by a great Korean golfer, Sung Hyun Park. I got the
news. And that's a bit of What's News for Now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider a contribution. My work is 100% listener funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. All right, for more in the news, we turn to our friends at the Talk Media News Service. They're at TalkMediaNews.com. On the line today is Ellen Ratner. Hey, Ellen.
How are you doing? Well, I'll tell you, it's been quite a night. I was on two calls today, one with the Democratic National Committee, one with the Progressives, and they are saying that what they really think matters is candidate selection and making sure that candidates reflect the community from which they come. So in other words, not just white men, but women, trans in Virginia, et cetera. Now, what's interesting is the trans candidate who won, the transgender candidate who won in Virginia, focused on all politics is local, the ability for people to commute.
Right.
And
infrastructure.
And so that really made them win.
Right. Her thing
and
was...
what they're saying is that it's very important to focus on local issues, mm-hmm. but also have people who are candidates who are very passionate about their local community as well.
Right. She said her chief issue was infrastructure.
Right. And, you know, the Republican would not even debate her.
Wow. Wow. I also think it's just sweet revenge that, you know, her opponent, the incumbent, was the guy who introduced the, you know, the bathroom bill. And,
right.
and the fact that she won is just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Right. I agree. And they say, both groups say that this portends very well for 2018. Now, in Ohio, the great state of Ohio, where I am from, there was a bill that did go down, as it did in California, and this was to not have prescription drugs be paid more than the Veterans Administration paid for it. Well, the problem is that the drug companies put millions of dollars into both California and Ohio. California was not on the ballot this time, but lost to the drug companies, and Ohio lost to the drug companies. 80% of people voted not to change how much they pay drug companies.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. It's really quite unbelievable when you think about it.
Yes, it is.
Okay, some other things going on. The Cuba policy has changed. Now, instead of individuals going to Cuba, it has to be in groups. And what's so interesting, even though when it was in groups before, I went through Miami, and there were three flights a day that I saw on the board that were going directly from Miami to Cuba. So even though people have to go in groups, a lot of it is still not going to change, is my guess.
Okay, but there are certain hotels that Americans are going to be barred from staying at, and
right.
restaurants
That's true.
And
stores. If there is any kind of Russian connection, anything like that, or if it's owned by the Cuban government, then Americans can't stay in it. I mean, give me a break.
That's just ironic, you know, considering this administration
right.
and its Russian ties. But okay,
But, you know, it was interesting. I remember being in Cuba, and there were all these Russian guys by the pool, and I started to sort of take their picture, and all of a sudden my camera disappeared.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. Also, it's interesting, the president is going to be going to China. Three basketball players were arrested for stealing, supposedly, allegedly stealing sunglasses. The sunglasses were worth over $400 apiece, and they were originally put in jail, but because the president is there, they were released. However, they're going to be tried in China.
Wow. Are these professional basketball players?
I think they're college basketball players.
Oh.
But, you know, it doesn't matter when
people.
You go to a foreign country, you have to obey their laws.
Of course you do. Well, no matter where you are, you should obey the laws. I mean,
right.
But especially if you're in a foreign country.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in a foreign country.
But the it's very interesting. There is the judge today did not put a total ban on anything lawyers can say on the Manafort case, but said that this was not public relations and that this was a time for them to sort of cut down on what they were actually saying in the Manafort case. She said this is not a PR thing, which is kind of interesting.
Okay.
She said that if they continue to make statements, they pose a substantial likelihood of material prejudice in this case. So that's kind of interesting. Okay, Lamar Alexander will be taking to the Senate floor probably in about an hour from when I'm speaking to you. And this is a bipartisan bill. It's Bipartisan Health Care Stabilization Act of 2017, which he's dealing with Patty Murray.
Uh-huh.
It was introduced by 24 senators, 12 Republicans and 12 Democrats on October 19th. You know, Donald Trump is claiming he wants a bipartisan health care bill, but of course we haven't seen that.
Right, but so they're going to, I'm amazed that Mitch McConnell is letting him introduce it.
Well, I don't think if Mitch McConnell wants to get any of his other legislation, like tax legislation, through, he can't stop it.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to play with some of the people in his party. And Lamar Alexander is a big cheese in
right.
the party.
Right. Well, good. So it's going to officially be introduced this afternoon.
That's right. Well, it was officially introduced, but Lamar Alexander is going to actually speak about
it today.
I see.
Okay. All right. Great.
Also, by the way, when the Democrats talked today, they said that Governor Hogan of Maryland, who is Republican, has been completely silent on Donald Trump, not one way or the other. They said the silence from Governor Hogan is absolutely deafening. Now, it's interesting, nobody addressed the issue of the Republican governor of Massachusetts, who is very popular with Democrats and will get reelected next year.
Oh, really? Huh. Now,
well, he's done a lot for opioid addiction. He's really led the way, and a lot of Democrats like him.
Okay. Well, that happens sometimes.
Occasionally, a stop clock is right twice a day,
yes,
as we
that's
say
right.
in the business.
That's right. What else is happening, Ellen?
Well, I think the most of today has been taken up with the elections. Now, it's very interesting. I was not invited to any calls by the Republican National Committee. I don't think they had one today.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked at their website, and they have not talked at all about the election. They're still, you know, hitting on the Democrats for taking up the Democratic position and not dealing with the Republican tax cuts and all that kind of stuff. But they have not dealt at all with the election loss.
You know,
they have not dealt at all with the fact that the Democrats won, you know, Hispanic seats, a trans person won a seat,
mm-hmm.
all of that kind of thing.
There are a few trans people won different elections
right.
around
well,
the country.
Well, one was a delegate and the other right. was in Minneapolis, who won a seat on city council.
That's
I
right.
believe.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because neither did Fox News have anything. Last night, as the returns were coming in and after they called it for Northam, we said, wonder what they're saying on Fox, and went to click over and nothing. They were, I don't even know what they were talking about. Apparently this morning, also, there was very little, if any, discussion of the election. They were talking about the election from a year ago.
Kind of crazy. Also, Chris Coons, who is a Democrat, he is from Delaware. He's very concerned about he's a senator, very concerned about the Justice Department, and is saying that they forced a resignation of a U.S. attorney
mm-hmm.
who was very pivotal in what was going on with the Russian situation, and he's very, very concerned about that.
Well, as he should be. I wish, you know, Republicans would be concerned about it. If the shoe were on the other foot, if it was the Democrats.
Oh, you'd be hearing him screaming, ranting and raving.
Oh, my God. There would be so many investigations going on, to quote Donald Trump. Our heads would be spinning.
For sure. And, of course, Donald Trump did not help matters at all yesterday when he tweeted out that had Ed Gillespie taken on his point of view and his issues, that he would have won Virginia. No, he wouldn't have won Virginia.
He still makes everything about him, doesn't he? Everything's got to be about him.
It's really quite staggering. I think Republicans were quite astounded by his tweets as well.
As they should be. And what Donald Trump did is send a message that he will not have anyone's back. You know, if you run, you know, on Donald Trump's platform, such as it is, he won't have your back. If you lose, you're on your own. He will find a way to diminish your worth. He'll find a way to put you down.
Right. Well, that is a very big concern. And so it'll be interesting to see how the Democrats, I think what's going to happen is the Democrats are going to see a surge of money pouring in after this election, actually.
Good, I hope so. Well, the Democrats need some help. In fact, that's what we're going to be talking about next. Ellen Ratner from the Talk Media News Service, talkmedianews.com.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. Bye-bye. All right. Richard Esko, RJ Esko, will be joining us to talk about the infighting among the Democrats and the whole Donna Brazile thing and litigating the future as opposed to litigating the past. It's a discussion that that we need to have, frankly, our party. Look, I'm a Democrat only so I can vote in the primaries. If not for that, if we didn't have a closed primary in Florida, I would have no party affiliation. Even though I don't think I've ever voted for a Republican, it would be a way of showing displeasure with the way the Democrats have done things. But as I've said before, you know, like it or not, we do have a two-party system in this country. And while eventually I think we may have a third party rise from the ashes, and maybe even a fourth party, we're not there yet. And if we want to get rid of Trump and these Neanderthals who are running the country right now, the Democrats are our only hope. So what we got to do is make the Democrats better. We'll get into that with RJ Esko next.
Jeff Bezos wants to get inside your home. I'll tell you why that's a bad idea. Today on Hightower's Radio Lowdown. Would you give your house key to a complete stranger, letting that person, whose name you don't even know, walk right into your home when you're not there? One stranger who's brazenly asking you and millions of other people to do just that is Jeff Bezos. He's head honcho of Amazon, the e-commerce behemoth whose vast supercomputer network routinely compiles and stores dossiers on every one of his customers. He's obsessed with having the most data on the most people. It's a little creepy. Now, adding to the creep factor, Jeff literally wants Amazon to get inside your home. And ironically, he's using security as his rationale. Rather than simply delivering the products you order from Amazon to your doorstep, the corporation wants a key to unlock your door, allowing its delivery crews to go inside and do you the favor of placing the packages securely in your abode. What could possibly go wrong with that? Other than you being robbed, of course, either by rogue Amazon employees or by hackers, who will certainly gain access to the corporation's computerized key codes. Or maybe Crusher, your pit bull, mauls the Amazon intruder and you get sued. Need I mention that Bezos expects you to pay for the privilege of having his employees enter your home? First, his dicey Open Sesame program, which he calls Amazon Key, is available only to customers who shell out $99 a year to be Amazon Prime members. Second, you must buy a special internet unlocking gizmo and a particular camera to join his corporate key club. And guess where you must go to buy this entry technology? Yes, Amazon, where prices for the gizmo and camera setup start at $250. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a deal! For Amazon, that is. Bezos' real goal is not to get inside your home, but inside your wallet.
Need an antidote to the progressive blues? Want some good news about how grassroots folks are rebelling against the corporate powers and winning? Well, here's an easy-to-swallow pill for you, the Hightower Lowdown. Hightower's monthly newsletter will give you the lowdown, even as it lifts you up. It's 4 pages a month, jam-packed with facts you can use, actions you can take, and Jim's own Texas humor, all for only $15 a year. To become a lowdowner, go to HightowerLowdown.org.
These are the sounds of crushed souls. The sounds of despair from former radio personalities, languishing in the purgatory of corporate consolidation. These former radio personalities have lost their livelihoods, not because they weren't entertaining or informative, but because they don't meet today's corporate terrestrial broadcast standards of being smelly, overweight douchebags, seething with vein-popping hatred. These radio refugees and their audiences have since migrated to the internet, but their struggle continues as the quest for monetization ensues. Nicole Sandler is leading the way to reestablishing thought-provoking and entertaining radio. And you can help by clicking the donate button on NicoleSandler.com. Donate today, or as much and as often as you can. Dry the tears of listeners by removing the rotting stench of corporate radio. Won't you help?
All right. Nicole Sandler back with you on the Nicole Sandler Show here at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network. Richard R.J. Eskow is the host and managing editor of the Zero Hour radio and TV show. He's the former lead writer for the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign and is a senior fellow at the Campaign for America's Future, where he writes at OurFuture.org. And a piece that he had up there a few days ago caught my eye and gave me the reason to invite Richard on the show today. It's titled Donna Brazile, the DNC. And democratizing the Democrats. Richard, are you there?
I'm here.
Hey, it's so good to talk with you. We don't do this often enough.
Yeah, great to talk to you too.
Dems had a great night last night, but that doesn't mean our troubles are over, does it?
No, of course not. First of all, enjoy the night, and secondly, you know, draw the right lessons from it. But, it was a great night. That doesn't mean that Republicans haven't still gerrymandered and vote suppressed all across the country. It doesn't mean that turnout isn't still key, so the Democrats have to appeal to base voters in order to get them out to vote, and they can't do that by pretending to be Republicans. So, we're not out of the woods yet, but it feels good to win one for a change, doesn't it?
It really, really does. You know, it was nice seeing the blue with the check mark next to it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been a while, you know. CNN ran a story yesterday on their website saying that favorable views of the Democratic Party have dropped to their lowest mark in more than 25 years, and they cited only 37% of Americans have a favorable opinion of the party, down from 44% in March, with 54% having an unfavorable view. And I'm like, okay, well, those numbers aren't very encouraging. And I'm reading down into the story and missing from the headline, but further down in there shows worse news for the Republicans, where just 30% of Americans have a favorable view of them, with 61% having an unfavorable opinion. It is kind of interesting how, in this case, that story is so skewed to sow more unrest within the Democratic Party.
There's another lesson from that too, I think, which is worth drawing. Yes, of course, they should mention that the Republicans are even more unpopular, but let's not forget that a year ago, being the party that you guys hate the least, mm-hmm. Did not work out so well for the Democrats. Not in the presidential, but not the down ballot either. So, you know, everybody, you know, hated Trump. Trump was the most unpopular presidential candidate in history, but he squeaked out a win. And, according to polling, Hillary was the second most unpopular presidential candidate in history. So I think one of the lessons of this is is that, you know, you can get people out to vote with an anti-Trump message, but it's not a sustaining, it's not going to be a sustaining source for victory. I mean, I also think the Virginia and New Jersey wins, and those were not the only wins, showed that, if you look at the demographics of them, these were core Democratic voters. These were not the white working class men that people think you can appeal to with conservative policies that look like Republican policies, that's not who turned out. And if you really look at the polls, you see that the core demographic for Democrats, which is, you know, black and brown people, women, younger people, mm-hmm. all of them, according to a recent Harvard-Harris poll, more left-wing than the party as a whole, more left-wing than white males. So, you know, if Democrats want to win, they've got to get turnout. If they want to get turnout, they've got to appeal to those voters.
And that's who won by large margin yesterday as well. A lot of women, a lot of people of color. I mean, the list of winners is like the diversity catalog, you know, and it's very encouraging to see. And the reason I think that they did so well is because they ran more, you know, more women, more people of color threw their hats in the ring, perhaps inspired by Donald Trump to run. Some women said they were inspired by marching in the Women's March, that they'd never thought of running for office before. But the fact is, so many of the seats, for instance, in Virginia's House of Delegates had been unchallenged, some of them for decades.
Yeah, you know, it's a beautiful thing when people realize that you can win, first you got to get in the game. And it's a beautiful thing if the Women's March caused all, you know, a lot of women to throw their pussy hats into the ring, as it were, if you will. Fantastic. You know, I love that. And I also think we saw that politics as usual was not the necessary winner here, meaning that you also had a Democratic socialist win in Manassas, Virginia.
Wow.
And he unseated one of the most powerful Republicans in the Virginia State House. You also had Phil Murphy ran for governor. He's an ex-Goldman Sachs guy, but he also ran with a very progressive campaign, including, you know, creating a state bank, $15 minimum wage. So, and he won, as was expected, but by a huge margin. So I think what it shows is that if Democrats show up to run and show up to vote, and if they offer people a real alternative, you had Danica Rahm, who is, you know, mm-hmm. a transgender woman running in a mixed district, but running against the Republican incumbent who described himself as the state's leading homophobe. The author of the state's anti-trans bathroom bill beat him. You know, if you show up offering alternatives, people will come out and they'll not only vote for you, but progressive groups worked their hearts out for all of these candidates, including Ralph Northam, and that makes a difference too.
Right, and it was also a huge get out the vote effort in Virginia, which, you know, sends another message to the party. Now, Richard R.J. Esko is with us. You know, I do have problems with the Democratic Party, and they were on display this week, especially since Politico published the first excerpt of Donna Brazile's new book, in which she decides to litigate yet again the 2016 election. You wrote and I agree that the Democrats keep saying don't relitigate the past. You say let's litigate the future instead. I think we must, but we keep going back to that question. And if you're on Twitter, you can't avoid it. Even this morning, I get the people who say, but Bernie wasn't a Democrat. First of all,
well, you know what? Neither are the millions of voters that the Democratic Party needs if it's going to start winning.
There you go.
You know, so you know what? Bernie wasn't a Democrat. Everybody who says that to me is really telling me I care about my tribal affiliation, mm-hmm. shirts versus skins or whatever you want to call it, you know, for pick up softball or whatever. I care about my tribal affiliation more than I care about winning elections. That's what a line like that says to me. And we've got to get over that, you know, that kind of tribal reflexive, no, you're not in the in-group, I'm in the in-group. You know, the same thing with the discussion of open primaries or same-day registering as a Democrat so that you can vote in the primary. Democrats should be looking at primaries as ways to recruit people into the party. They should allow same-day voting. Mm-hmm. If you want to vote in next June's New York Democratic primary, you had to register as a Democrat by last October 23rd. That's insane. So, and then people have said to me in response, well, you know, if you're not a dedicated Democrat, well, my attitude is if you're not a dedicated Democrat, let's give you a reason to be one.
Right. As I was saying just before I brought you on, if not for the fact that I live in Florida and there's closed primaries here, I probably would have no party affiliation. That's what I was in California. I'm not a big joiner. And the fact is, I don't think I've ever voted for a Republican. I have issues with the Democratic Party and a lot of the way they do things. Now, there are two schools of thought here. You can go inside and change from the inside, which is the most effective way, probably, or you can agitate from the outside. There's that whole inside-outside strategy, and I think it takes both to make something work. There is an issue, though, with the Democrats that the Donna Brazile book is just shining a spotlight on. But this goes back to, you know, this whole issue of what happened during the 2016 election and then the election of Tom Perez as chair of the DNC. Now, Keith Ellison tried to have a kumbaya moment, and he said he came aboard as a vice chair and said, we're going to do this unity thing and we're going to all come together. But the party still seems to be making the same mistakes. Just a week or so ago, didn't they oust some of the more progressive people from the Rules Committee?
Well, they did, and yeah, there's no question that the dominant corporate wing of the party, which, by the way, I was registered independent in California. Now that I'm in Maryland, I've re-registered as a Democrat, mm-hmm. but for the same reasons you said. But now I think of it as registering as a Democrat to participate in a hostile takeover.
Uh-huh.
That's of the people from the corporate politicians. And you know, I think that sure, they're playing hardball to retain their power, even though they've mismanaged the party into losing 2/3 of state houses, 2/3 of governorships, all 3 branches of the federal government. It's clearly time to sweep these people aside. Instead, they're consolidating their power like they did at the DNC meeting. And then they say, well, gee, we need unity. Well, you know what? Let me and my friends be in charge, and then we'll ask you for unity.
Yeah.
But before we get unity, how about we have a healthy debate about where this party needs to go and how to prevent it from losing under you guys. Now they're taking Ralph Northam's win as a sign that, oh, centrists are great. I saw Jen Psaki pushing that last night on CNN. Other people have been pushing it. Well, they've forgotten John Ossoff's loss. They've forgotten 2016. They've forgotten all the statistics I just recited. They're forgetting Phil Murphy in New Jersey running to the left. And they're forgetting that even Northam had some progressive positions on education and other things. So, let's have a debate about it. It's called the Democratic Party. Let's have a democratic process by which the party's future is decided, and based on the polling and based on the common sense answer to the problems we're facing, I'm confident that this party will become a truly progressive party if they don't cheat.
And that's a big if, and that's what Donna Brazile why did she come out with this book now? Is it only for her pocketbook? Doesn't she realize that this is, for someone who's a party loyalist, as I believe she is, this was a big slap in the face, wasn't it?
Well, I'm sure there were multiple reasons why. You know, a lot of my, progressive Democratic friends, as opposed to progressive friends who may or may not be Democrat, my progressive Democratic friends, they like her. I don't know her. She blocked me, actually, which is another story on Twitter. And I was very nice, but she blocked me anyway. I just posed a question she didn't want to answer.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's partially to sell books. I think it's partially to rehabilitate her image because, she said in her book excerpt, well, I looked hard and I couldn't find any evidence of DNC officials trying to rig the race for Hillary. Well, that's funny, Donna, because I seem to remember you specifically giving debate questions in an unethical way to one debater, Hillary Clinton, and not the other, Bernie Sanders. So you really could have just checked your own email and
right.
You would have found it. But so I think she's trying to rehabilitate herself. I think she's trying to, with the left, because she recognizes that's where the party's going. I think she's trying to sell books. I don't know if she, she was renominated. She was given a party position in that same Las Vegas meeting. Maybe she's trying to position herself for another shot at being DNC chair.
Oh, God.
I don't know. But whatever it is, you know, it did seem at this. And by the way, she was shocked. Shocked to find out that there was influence peddling going on in the party establishment. I mean, we all knew it. I'm glad that she told the truth about what happened, but it wasn't a news flash either, and she shouldn't have written it as if it was a shocking revelation. We knew what was going on, although this deal that she brought to light was fascinating and important.
Are you talking about the joint fundraising agreement?
Well, I'm talking about the joint fundraising agreement with the extra paragraphs or side deal giving the Clinton campaign control over the party's funding, hires, you know, is it the DNC could choose who it wanted to hire, but only from a list of candidates that the Clinton campaign approved, and what was said about any particular candidate, not just Hillary, but any candidate by the DNC. So, yes, this side deal giving the Clinton campaign control over the DNC, in effect. That's what I'm talking about, and I'm glad she brought it to light.
As am I. I mean, look, these are things we need to know in order to, what do they say, in order to get over a problem, you have to first admit you have one. So,
right?
So the party, I think, now admits it has a problem. But I saw Tom Perez all over TV yesterday, and I'm wondering if he realizes. Look, I went to see him. Bernie did that unity tour with him. They came down to Miami. I went to see him there. He talked a good game, but again, when they oust the Sanders people from the Rules Committee, I have to wonder what they're thinking. It's like, you know, Howie Klein is a regular on my program. He's usually here every Thursday. And one of the things that it's almost like beating a dead horse, but it's so important, is you look at who the party puts up for races. A good example is with Jeff Flake retiring. The Democrats have a chance to pick up a Senate seat in Arizona, a really good chance. Who do they put up? The congressperson with the worst record in Congress on the Democratic side, Kyrsten Sinema, who votes with the Republicans like 98% of the time. She's got an F from Progressive Push. She's just like the worst of the worst. They did the same, doing the same thing, it seems, in Nevada, where the Democrats have a chance to pick up Dean Heller's seat with this woman. I think her name is Jackie Rosen. Again, the least progressive. And I have to wonder why it's almost like it's that old adage about the circular firing squad or you know, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. The Democrats have a penchant for doing this stuff. And why Chuck Schumer is dead set on having these very non-progressive people as our senatorial candidates when a progressive would make a whole lot more sense.
Well, it's probably what the big donors want. And let's not forget that ideologically, we're talking about a party leadership that is very close to the Republican Party of, you know, pre-Tea Party Republican Party. You know, this is ideologically what they're comfortable with. It's culturally what they're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And it's what their donors like. And it's the reason why we have to kick them out. It's the reason why they keep losing. Because they do not believe in being the Working People's Party. They do not believe in challenging the status quo. They think that it's enough to run a woman, for example, with as if the women of this country aren't attuned. It's so condescending, among other things, because it implies that, you know, they've created this false polarity between identity as a woman or as a person of color or as and economics, when anybody of any identity knows you can't separate female oppression from the fact that women make 80 cents on the dollar now mm-hmm. for every dollar a man makes. You can't separate identity oppression from the fact that African-American unemployment is twice that of white unemployment. You know, we could list all the statistics, but they create this phony idea that it's just enough to have a candidate with the right identity without understanding that they have to have an agenda, economic, social, cultural, that speaks to the suffering of all working Americans, including working Americans of that identity. That's why they keep losing.
We do have divide, though, in the Democratic Party on some issues where, as you write in this article at ourfuture.org, I'll post it on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com, where I post the podcast. I'll post a link. Medicare for All, you write, a new Glass-Steagall, the breakup of the big banks and an end to job-killing corporate trade deals, the downsizing of our military and national security complexes. There is a divide within the party. But it's uglier than just the issues. You also write about, you know, the false Bernie bro memes and dismissing progressive proposals as unachievable ponies. There's an ugliness to it that needs to stop if the Democratic Party is going to be successful, if we're ever going to overcome these differences.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, I mean, one of the great undiscovered or important undiscovered polls of the 2016 campaign was the one showing that people felt during the primary that Clinton supporters were far more aggressive and hostile online than Bernie supporters. This was during the pushing of the, you know, nasty Bernie bro meme, mm-hmm. which is not to suggest that some Bernie supporters didn't get carried away. But I actually tried to do, I was working for the campaign then, a sort of analysis of identified hostile, quote-unquote, Bernie bro memes. A lot of them were actually Trump supporters. A yep. lot of them couldn't trace at all, which means God knows whether they came from Macedonia or, you know, whatever.
That's right.
But there weren't that many, and we now know that the Clinton campaign was actively pushing the Bernie bro meme, and we also know from polling, as I mentioned earlier, that when Democrats or Democratic-based voters were asked recently, do you support or oppose movements that want to move the Democratic Party to the left and remove its current leadership, which is, you know, a pretty lefty or progressive position, a majority of Democrats, 52%, said they support them. Now, 55% of women, in other words, they're describing the Bernie movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
55% of women said they supported it, only 46% of men. 55% of African Americans said they supported it. So much for the white Bernie bro meme.
Right.
65% of African Americans, of Hispanics said they supported it. And 69% of voters age 18 to 34 who are the Democratic Party's future said they supported it. Right now, you've got Hillary Clinton said contemptuous things about this movement in her book and in supporting her book. You've got Hillary supporters on TV and radio and media every day saying contemptuous things about millennials and the left, contemptuous and dismissive. They are burning their own future when they do that, because that is the future of the Democratic Party or whatever is going to rise out of its ashes if they don't change their ways.
Boy, that's so right. If you look at some of the exit polling that they had, I was watching MSNBC for a while last night, and they had exit polling out of Virginia, and the number of millennials who voted for Northam was through the roof. I mean, that's how he won, because young people came out and vote, and that they're seeing that in a lot of these races from yesterday. The young people actually came out and voted in this election yesterday, which is what we need. And so if you alienate them from the party, it's again, shooting ourselves in the foot.
Well, of course it is. And again, you know, they didn't necessarily come out to vote for Northam because
no.
he was a former Republican, much as they might think. They came out to vote for Northam because, A, they hate Trump.
Mm-hmm.
B, the number one issue in this race was health care, and the governor of a state can do a lot, especially with Medicaid and Medicaid expansion and so on. None of the issues that the centrists have been destroying the Democratic Party with, like NAFTA, pro-NAFTA, you know, that kind of thing, their opposition to Glass-Steagall or breaking up the big banks, none of those issues were a factor in the Virginia race. What was a factor in the Virginia race was people can't stand Trump. They hated Gillespie's racist campaigning,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted a change, and they wanted a guy who would be better on health care. Northam is a physician and a Democrat. That's what that was about. So those are, and by the way, women, African Americans, they came out, they showed up to vote yesterday, and those are the same cohorts that say they want a new Democratic Party that's further to the left. So you want to win, that's what you got to do.
I hear from listeners. I got an email just yesterday because this was one of the discussions we had on Friday about the future of the Democratic Party. And one listener said, I'm done voting for the lesser of two evils. I that's no way forward. And as I say, look, there may eventually be the rise of a third party, maybe sooner rather than later. But you know what? It's not going to be before the 2018 election. And if we want a way out from under these creeps who are trying to take our health care, you know, raise our taxes under the guise of cutting taxes, and do everything else that the Republicans are trying to do, the way is to, I hate to say it, but you got to vote Democratic. My question is, what do we say to those people? What does the party have to do to get those people back? Because many of them are lost.
Well, you know, Thoreau said he was in this world but not of it. That's kind of how I feel about the Democratic Party right now. I'm in it. I'm not on it. I would say to those people, we have a cause and a movement for change, for real change, and the Democratic Party is just one tool. So get in there, make sure the Republicans don't destroy democracy and the world by voting for those guys when you have to, but don't take it to heart and make yourself a Clintonite or a Northamite or anything else. Vote for those guys tactically, but know that we're in a long struggle to change the country, and the Democratic Party can be a tool in that, and see the battle for control of the Democratic Party as a battle for our future. But whatever you do, you know, don't lose sight of the cause. Join groups like Our Revolution and other groups that are working within the Democratic Party. Democratic Socialists of America, if you want to join a group that is working within the Democratic Party, but have your alliance to the movement in the group and not the party.
Right. Indivisible is doing great things. I mean,
right.
And that's getting people involved, and that's what it takes. Do you think, Richard, that there's any way the party will ever eliminate superdelegates? Because every 4 years, that's a huge bone of contention.
They better, because I think that as long as they have superdelegates, they're not going to look like a very democratic party, and it's going to hurt them. So they better get rid of them. And as long as I'm around, I'm going to fight to get rid of them.
Yeah, it's got to happen, because otherwise, as you said, it just there is no fairness there. And for a party that's called the Democratic Party, that's very undemocratic.
Yep, the superdelegates were created to make sure that no lefty like George McGovern ever became the nominee again. So they were created to thwart the Democratic Party. Well, you know what? If there was ever usefulness to that, there isn't anymore, and they've really got to rethink that.
Yeah.
And I believe we will get rid of that. I believe we will defeat the superdelegate process.
Sooner rather than later?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, but that's certainly my goal.
Yeah, mine as well. When you talk about building bench strength, you know, when you talk about leadership, we have a big problem that the leadership in Congress are, and I'm anything but an ageist. Look, I'm a huge Bernie Sanders supporter, and I hope he runs in 2020. So it's not about age. But when you look at the leadership of the House and the Senate, on both sides, they're very old, and people who've been entrenched in there for so long, there's no fresh blood. There's no new talent coming up. How do we get around that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's a chicken-egg problem, because it's hard to get fresh blood when you're not winning any new seats, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think that it's a problem. I mean, the young, you know, Tim Ryan tried to challenge Nancy Pelosi, but he's a blue dog. He's worse than Nancy Pelosi.
Right.
So we don't want him. I think that we just need to keep electing progressive Democrats until they're strong. You know, look, I think we should not be embarrassed to think of ourselves as a left Tea Party who's going to drive this party into a new identity that can win more elections, because whether people call each other left or right, liberal or conservative, they like the left agenda. I think we should not be embarrassed to say we're going to take this party over, we're going to get the kind of clout we need so that we can take the speakership, take the Senate, hopefully majority leader position, and other leadership positions within the party. It's age aside, it's an ossified party. It's just calcified in place, and we've got to do something to to crack it open. And I think that, to me, is running new, exciting, progressive candidates of every age, but, you know, new is the operative word.
Yes, and if yesterday is any example, there are people out there running, so we have a lot to look forward to. Richard Esko, thank you so much. This half hour has flown by. It's always great to talk with you. I really appreciate it. People need to check out your show, The Zero Hour. ThisIsTheZeroHour.com is where you can find it. Of course, on iTunes, I'll post the link on the blog. And we can find you on Twitter at RJ Esko and not block you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Tomorrow on the program is usually Howie Klein Day. He's out tomorrow, so our old pal Dave Johnson will be here, and we'll talk about the fact that it is a year since we woke up to the news that Donald Trump is president. All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone.